ladies?
I think so.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Welcome back to the Drunk Poet Society. I'm Taylor.
I'm Felice.
And it is a beautiful rainy day here in Southern California.
Sounds like you're being sarcastic, but like it actually is.
I didn't mean that sarcastically. I really enjoy rainy days. It's more so just like the kind of like I wish I could just chill and watch. I wish I could chill and watch Harry Potter marathon.
Oh, that does sound really, really good.
Right? It sounds like a rainy day movie marathon. Part of me really wants to just like scrap all of my study and schoolwork right now and just like.
See, I should have been doing way more this week, and so because I haven't, I'm catching up, so I have no chance. I have no choice. I have to keep working. But my husband really wanted to do Lord of the Rings.
That's also a rainy day marathon, for sure.
Oh, yeah. And I haven't done those in a long time. The Hobbit, I feel like I watched those in theaters.
Yeah, but that was the only time I've seen them, actually.
Yeah, me too.
I've not watched them since. Mm-hmm. But Harry Potter, it's been, I want to say, like, they're the kind of movies that come on when I'm at a hotel, and I'm like, oh, I'll catch the end of the fourth movie. But I haven't sat down and watched them in a while, and I'm feeling a little nostalgic for them.
Especially the later ones, because I feel like whenever I see, like, oh, okay, I could watch the, what, like, 5, 6, and 7, so, like, Order of the Phoenix, or Half-Blood Prince, or, like, the epicness of Deathly Hallows, like, the duo of that. I don't know. It's such, like, an emotional investment as well at the same time. It's kind of like when I think of watching This Is Us, like, do I have the emotional capacity to sit down and watch an episode of this right now? And sometimes the answer is no. No, I do not. And then I just watch The Office again.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel that.
Well, welcome. We are starting out today. We're working on Harry Potter, and depending on where you are, it is either the Sorcerer's Stone or the Philosopher's Stone.
Yes.
Lots of people like joking that here in the States we're not sophisticated enough to know what a philosopher is, so they had to change it to sorcerer. But whatever the reason it was, I know it is either. So, yes. J.K. Rowling. Come on. Everybody knows who wrote Harry Potter.
Yeah. In case you didn't know, J.K. Rowling wrote Harry Potter. She wrote, I have been to, in Edinburgh, the little elephant cafe that claims this is, like, where she wrote it down on the napkin.
Did you feel inspired? Did you write a hit children's series?
Not yet. But maybe it takes a minute. Maybe, like, you have a coffee there, and then, like, years later, you just wake up and go, ah!
Maybe you write about an elephant cafe. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. It's fine. Full of great ideas.
Yes. So. But I really enjoyed revisiting this book. I had only read it once. Mm-hmm. Have you read it multiple times, or?
I don't think I've read The Sorcerer's Stone more than once. I feel like I've read some of the others. Because I think it felt like, as far as the film to book translations, it felt like this one was probably the truest translation of any of the others. So I think I was like, well, I've seen the movie recently, so like, do I need to read the book again? Whereas reading like The Prisoner of Azkaban and watching that movie feel very different to me. So I've definitely read that book since I've read this one again. Yeah.
Because I read this book, then I saw the movie, and now I've just reread it. Mm-hmm. And actually, I listened to it on Audible.
Oh, with the really cool British guy that does all the voices?
Yeah,
God,
great.
What's his name? I don't remember his name. He's so good.
I don't know, but it was fantastic, because I had a lot of driving to do these past few weeks, so I got to listen to this one. But yeah, it was really enjoyable revisiting all that. I definitely have some remarks to make about upon rereading it as, like, an adult. Like, I read this in... When was the first book come out?
I don't remember. I want to say that I was in third or fourth grade.
Yeah.
When I read them all, but that was, like, when the third book was coming out.
I probably read this in junior high, if I had to guess. That sounds about right for me. So this is the first time rereading it as an adult, and I have some thoughts. But first, do we want to introduce our
cocktail?
Our cocktail.
sure, and also it's Jim Dale, because I had to look it up. He's so
good.
Okay, our cocktail today is our take on butterbeer.
Yes.
So I don't think we're going to rename it. No need. Also deviated a little bit from our ordinary today, because as if you're an avid listener, you would probably know that we're not huge fans of sweet drinks.
Yeah.
Even that, like, what was another sweet one we did? The Singapore Sling, that one was pretty sweet, wasn't it?
Anytime we use, like, blue curacao is usually pretty sweet, but we try it. Yeah, we're just definitely not super sweet people.
We were looking up...
So we're not super sweet people.
We're very sweet and charming. But we were looking up butter beer recipes, and by we, I mean Taylor was looking up butter beer recipes, and some of the ones that we were looking at were, like, this much butter, like straight up butter.
A quarter cup of butter.
Was that one cocktail?
I think that was for one, two, but still, that was.
So we went a little different here. So I started out with a base of a scoop of vanilla ice cream, which already is very different for us. A scoop of vanilla ice cream, upon which I poured about, I think it was about a shot of rum. Honestly, I eyeballed it, but it wasn't more than that. There's no way. On top of which I also added, so this was a dark rum. On top of that, I added, about half of that, maybe even less, of butterscotch schnapps.
Mm-hmm.
And we topped the whole thing off with, I don't know, some kind of vanilla cream soda.
So it's all very sweet ingredients. We have not tasted it yet. And since our photo is deflated a little bit.
It does not look as cute.
But I'm excited to give it a little go. We just have it in one cup with two straws. give you a little visual for that.
Well, let's make sure that none of the... Good. Okay, I want to make sure neither of the straws were just ice cream. Let's see. We can't cheers. Well, cheers our straws. Cheers, yay.
Honestly,
I don't hate it.
It's boozy ice cream.
Yeah. I really, really thought I was gonna hate it.
It's. I think
more rum.
Yeah, but like I honestly think it. Cause I bet like I really like Kahlua and vanilla ice cream. Mm-hmm. I think I wouldn't like this if there wasn't ice cream in it.
I think the trouble too, and I don't know if you're getting this at all from the butterscotch. I kind of have an aftertaste in my mouth right now, like I just had a pancake with maple syrup.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of got, like, a maple-y flavor, and maybe that's the combo of the dark rum and the butterscotch. Because I feel like if there was more rum, then the butterscotch wouldn't be so prevalent, but it is butter beer, so
it is butter beer. Okay, I'm not hating it.
No, I don't hate it. Okay.
All right.
Well, that's... I'm still glad we're sharing.
Yeah, me too.
But
me too. I don't need a milkshake midday.
I don't need a milkshake to myself, like, ever.
Yeah. But sometimes.
I mean, your sister and I used to share at Mel's, what is it, Mel's Drive-In, Mel's Diner, whatever it's called down in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. We used to split the espresso milkshake, which I'm pretty sure is literally just milk, ice cream, and espresso beans. But it was still awesome.
The one time, and I split it too, but like Sam and I will go to Alamo Draft House and they have boozy milkshakes. Mm-hmm. And so like if you're watching a movie and you can order a boozy milkshake, you know,
sometimes you just gotta do it, man. Yeah. Well, all right. So now that that's done, I suppose we can start with, I'm rather than losing direction while giving you a synopsis of this book, I decided just to look one up this time.
But, like we discussed, for the most part, if you've seen the movie, like, pretty straightforward.
The plot is really, really similar. So this says, the first popular children's novel by J.K. Rowling, a boy learns on his 11th birthday that he is the orphaned son of two powerful wizards and possesses unique magical powers of his own. He is summoned from his life as an unwanted child to become a student at Hogwarts, an English boarding school for wizards. There, he meets several friends who become his closest allies and help him discover the truth about how his parents mysteriously died.
Hoo-hoo.
So, reading it like that, like, I feel like you're missing so much of the nuance of the actual book, but I don't know, would that synopsis make you keen to read this book?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yes, it definitely would, but I also think the synopsis can be written in a wildly different way, and I would still read the book.
That's true.
So I don't know, but...
Yeah, I don't think it would... I mean, the whole point is not necessarily finding out the mystery of how his parents died, because he found that out very, very soon. Like, early on in the book.
Yeah. That was not the key feature in all of it.
No. But, like, beyond the plot of this book, the most... I'd say more impressive than the plot is just J.K. Rowling's world-building abilities. Mm-hmm. And I know we don't do a ton of sci-fi fantasy, so this is kind of a nice shift of that. But her ability to create this whole world, that's a part of reading books, especially when it comes to sci-fi and fantasy, that I'm most impressed with. Because I'm like, how did you just sit down? Like, you can't necessarily write it linearly. Like, you just have to have character. I don't know.
And even, like, you know, naming things. Like, the cool thing about setting something in an imaginary world is you've just given yourself as the author full reins at however you want a world build. Like, you've not really put any confines on it until you start creating rules and, mm-hmm. like, you know, once you're, and then you put it in the context of Hogwarts and now you're at, like, a school or a university. So now you have, like, slightly more rules, but at the same time, it's magic and no one has ever heard of this before. So you can name it whatever you want, which is a super cool,
oh yeah,
like, tool to have for her. So, I fell definitely back in love with it after hearing, you know, even one of my favorite scenes is still on the train when they're just tasting all the different, like jelly
the beans. Can. Oh, yeah, Bertie Bott's flavor beans, yeah.
Yeah, and Dumbledore always hates, he makes a comment, this is later not on the train, but like how he always gets like
a bogey flavor. No, yeah, no, it was a vomit.
Vomit flavored one, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just so creative. And, but it still has foundations in forms of reality. Like, half of the spells that she's using, most of the spells she's using, all just have Latin bases. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, well, let me just look up the word for light in Latin. All right, here we go. Yeah. Like, that's what our spell's gonna be. But, and to us Americans, some of the names also felt very creative. Although I have since learned, since, you know, and being an adult and having English family members, that some of the names in this book were not far-reaching at all, even if you think that they are.
Dudley.
I never went to school with anyone named Seamus.
That's true.
Also, Seamus. I probably didn't say it right in my head all of those years because it's not spelled like Seamus because it's, what, Gaelic?
Yeah.
At me. I don't know. So I think that when you're reading this, especially as a kid, you just want to, like, be included in all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, for millennials, there are really, really popular memes now that say, like, I didn't get my Hogwarts letter when I was 11. Where was my Hogwarts letter?
Yeah, and that's why even, like, you know, when Pottermore did their whole quiz thing, and, you know, it was such a massive part of my childhood, and it was funny because I wasn't necessarily the Harry Potter fan of my friends. Like, I had a couple other friends, like Megan and I think a few other ones who were, like, the Harry Potter kids.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I wasn't, like, rushing home to take the quiz and figure out what house I was in and stuff. But now there's such a big nostalgia factor because, like, that was such a big part of my childhood, so.
Well, and it's so funny, too, because a lot of the adults that I know and most of my friends tend to identify with a house so very much, and it,
like, you with your I was gonna call them joggers, what are they called,
my sweatpants,
yeah,
my Ravenclaw sweatpants, oh yeah, my keys at school are on, like, a Ravenclaw lanyard, and I don't know, I feel like maybe that changes over time too, because as we have grown up, many of the people I know have just resigned themselves to, like, yeah, I'm a Hufflepuff. Most of my friends would fall into that category. But I want to say, like, in junior high and high school, people wanted to, it was really, really kind of binary between Slytherin and Gryffindor.
And to be honest,
you identified as one of those two things.
But, like, it kind of is that in the book, too. Like, you do get these, like, kind of
tertiary characters.
Yeah, and you meet someone, like, even Cedric Diggory is Hufflepuff.
But that's, like, way far on, too. You don't meet a ton that are not Slytherin or Gryffindor in The Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, as I was listening to this, I was like, they're just kind of offhandedly mentioned, but really the lead players in this first book is, it's all about Gryffindor and Slytherin. Mm-hmm. Like, even who's gonna win the House Cup, Gryffindor or Slytherin. Like, Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw are not even really contenders for anything, so which kind of sucks.
The loyal kids and the smart kids are we're just
second or third place or whatever, because, like,
they're probably not as competitive because the Hufflepuffs just, like, want to support everybody and be super kind and loyal, and the Ravenclaws are just like, well, you know, did I do well on my exams?
Yeah.
did I finish all of these books? So maybe that also kind of makes, like, a little side point, or now I'm just being a giant nerd and reading into it way too far. But I agree with the nostalgia factor.
Yeah.
I had it on my desk at school, and my students were like, Ms. Fisher, you've read all those books. You've read them all. Like, why are you reading this book right now? It's like, I just need to.
Sometimes
I'm sorry, you just want to reread it. Come on.
I think one thing that was interesting, and maybe a little different from the movie, I don't think they played up quite as much how much Ron and Harry disliked Hermione.
At the beginning.
Mm-hmm. They really did not want to have anything. Rude. Yeah, and she, like, I feel like in the movie she was just kind of this girl where they're like, well, she's kind of annoying, but guess she can hang with us. Whereas, like, in the book they were like, get this girl mm-hmm. away from us. She
it
is
wasn't
rude.
Until It wasn't until the troll incident mm-hmm. where I think that kind of brought them together. And, you know, trauma makes bonds. And that's what we learned when, quote, Professor Snape let the troll into the castle, you know, and tried to defeat it on his own. He wanted to be a big tough guy. These are all obviously the musings of children. This is not actually what happened.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until then that they kind of developed this bond. And then it went from, like, nothing to, like, yeah, cool, we're friends now. We're going to solve the mystery together.
Yeah. And then they were all in.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Yeah.
And then also... I liked how in depth it went into the Christmas time, because, I mean, like, now I'm jumping around, but, like, how they stayed there over Christmas holidays. It was, like, Harry and Ron and Ron's brothers, and then they all got the different sweaters, but, like, that was such, I think in the movie, I haven't seen the movie in a little while, but, like, it really kind of, like, warms your heart, because Harry was so appreciative. He's like, I got a gift, and it's this sweater. And then Ron's like, oh, another sweater. And it was just cute. Like, it was a little, you know, tropey of the, maybe the kid who doesn't have a family. I don't know, but not really. I don't know.
Maybe that's a trope now because of Harry Potter, but I don't know about it then. There were, like, little bits here and there that you can kind of get the author's perspective on. Like, you know that she probably has big old plot points mapped out. She's like, okay, so there's gonna be this place where this object is hidden, and the bad guy's gonna try and get in there, and Harry's gonna beat him, and, you know, it's gonna have something to do with the cheesy plot line of, like, his mother's love or whatever that makes me almost roll my eyes every time. But the things that she... the little, like, breadcrumbs that she almost uses to get you there are the interesting parts. Like, over the winter break, Harry receives as a gift a coat. He doesn't know from who, but it's a cloak that belonged to his dad. And he's mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, cool. What does this do? And he puts it on, and it's he and Ron, and he's like, oh, it makes me invisible. That's pretty cool. Let's see what we can do with it. And he decides to... one of the first things he's going to do with it is go to the restricted section of the library so they can look up. At that point in time, did they know about the Sorcerer's Stone? Did Hagrid ruin it for them? Because he ruins everything.
Yeah,
Hagrid's not good at secrets. He needs to shut up. He's not good at secrets.
They were trying to look up, what's his name?
Nicholas Flamel?
Yes.
Okay.
That's who they were. They weren't looking at the Sorcerer's Stone. They just wanted to know about Nicholas Flamel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. That's how they found out about the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah.
Because of Nicholas Flamel. Because Hagrid says Nicholas Flamel's name. Like, a dum-dum. Hagrid!
Yeah.
You're big oaf. What you doing?
Yeah. So why he thought he could keep, like, a dragon egg under wraps.
One thing that, as far as Hagrid goes, and I really hope you're familiar with this book if you are following along with us, because we're going all over the place. But one thing that I thought was interesting, going from book to movie, was they kind of made Hagrid dumber in the movie. So in the book, in the very, very first scene, not in the first scene, but when they're on the island and it's raining and you first meet Hagrid, mm-hmm. he gives Harry a cake that says, Happy Birthday, Harry. And it doesn't give you any indication. Like, it even says in quotes, like, actually, Happy Birthday, Harry. But in the movie, and what has kind of been, like, put into merchandise and been, like, overly produced is this really clumsily spelled version of Happy Birthday, Harry, where everything is, like, spelled incorrectly.
Oh, wow. I don't remember that.
Yeah. And I was specifically I was shopping for gifts, mm-hmm. and I was on Etsy, and I was looking at pins and things, and I was like, right. It said, like, H-A-P-E-E, and birthday was spelled weird. And it was kind of like, okay, so... that brings it into, like, he was kicked out of Hogwarts early as, like, a teenager, but does that mean that, like, you don't know how to read? You don't need to have to read in order to go to Hogwarts?
Yeah.
Is Hagrid just supposed to be deemed as this lovable, stupid oaf? And granted, he sometimes makes, like, bad choices. Like, oversharing when you are tricked by 11-year-olds. But, I don't know. So, that kind of bothered me. I was like, why are you trying to make Hagrid stupid?
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I don't remember that at all, but...
Also, why don't you teach math?
Because, like, yeah.
And reading.
It's one of those things where, well, I guess... Maybe they figure by 11, they've gotten the basics down.
I don't know. I saw the other day, oh my gosh, it was the cutest thing.
Wait, 11, 10, 9, 8, 6, what is that, 5th grade?
11-year-olds? My students are 11-year-olds, 6th grade.
6th grade?
Yeah.
I was doing some multiplication by then. Maybe they figure that's all.
You should be doing a lot more than multiplication.
I can't remember what I was doing in 5th grade.
But, yeah, no, 6th grade, yeah, you should still be, like, taking classes and stuff on that kind of, I'm just saying.
They're magic, they can, if, like, this was this, no, I was gonna say, like,
This took place in the 90s, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because I was gonna be like, so pre-smartphones, now, alright, this is me on a little tangent, then we could switch back. We're in a time where I feel like we should be teaching kids differently because we have access to different technology sure. than we used to have.
Yeah.
Everything's accessible on our smartphones. So I think it should be taught more critical thinking skills and things like that, not like memorize all these formulas. I was like, if I am in any job setting and I have my cell phone on me and I need a formula, I can Google it. Like, easy. So I feel like it should be more critical thinking. Give them a word problem with a real life scenario and say, here's the formula, how do you start? Because that's still a check of concepts. So like, with this one, they're magic. Maybe they don't need to learn as much as us muggles, you know?
Maybe.
Like, maybe they can just, like, I know that's this is a pre-smartphone, but maybe they can just be like, oh, what's 4 plus 4? And then they say a little spell and it...
But the only critical reasoning that they're using is in Professor Snape's class.
Yeah.
Like, that's when, like, he's giving them scenarios. And also, one thing I will say is that you get a lot more potions class in the book than you get in the movie. Like, I want to say that they go to potions class once in the book. Mm. I mean, in the movie. And it's definitely, it's more than that in the book. Not to get on my, high horse, because literally everything that I do has to do with education, but students have such a hard time with critical reasoning. Like, answer and recalling things, like, I think during a research project, I asked a question that was like, what, you're studying a body system, they were all assigned different ones, like, maybe the circulatory system. That's your system. Mm-hmm. What system in a plant does the same job as a circulatory system in the human body? And they learn about human bodies, they learn about plant systems. Because it wasn't necessarily Googleable, I got so many students are like, Ms. Fisher, I can't find the answer. I don't know what it is. I'm like, no, you need to think about it. You have to look at this and look at that and find the comparison between the two. You can't just Google it and get an answer. So, that was a particular frustration because I graded all of those this week. But, yeah. One thing that I found cute that I saw about the movie that I learned recently is that during big study scenes in the Sorcerer's Stone, Emma Watts would use her quill to write stuff down. She treated it kind of like a diary.
Yeah.
And so, like, with her quill, she would say, like, my name is Emma Watson, and I'm playing Hermione. And, like, during the scenes where, you know, it's a study hall, I think in this particular one, like, Snape keeps giving Harry and Ron crap for talking, and Hermione is just kind of there, like, writing the whole time. Yeah, so there's, like, printouts of these that you can see online now that are just adorable little...
That's really cute.
Very
you know
cute.
What else is adorable?
Mm-hmm.
People who like to give us sponsorships.
Oh, yeah, that's really cute.
Let's take a listen to them. Segway! All right, welcome back.
Hello, welcome.
Let's talk more Harry Potter.
I really enjoy Harry Potter.
Let me bring up the thing that I noticed as an adult. So, this is towards the end now, I'm skipping a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, Harry and Ron and Hermione, work together to get through all the secret passages, to get to finally, you know, where the mirror is, and Professor Quill.
Mm-hmm.
And
Quirrell.
Quirrell, sorry.
Quirrell.
Maybe it was the accent that threw me off. Quirrell. And And so Harry makes it by himself, and we could talk about more about the stuff leading up to that later, but oh, and I have something else to bring up too. Anyways, so Professor Quirrell, we learn he's wearing this turban the whole time, and we find out that he who shall not be named, Voldemort, is actually on the back of his head, because he was nearly killed with the whole fight with Harry's parents, mm-hmm. and he kills Harry's parents, tries to kill Harry, doesn't know why, but can't kill him, and pretty much gets zapped of all life energy, and in order to try and build up his strength again, he's a parasite on the back of this dude's head, and we find out also that they have to drink unicorn blood in order to, like, gain strength and stuff, but anyways, so, there's a point where Harry is looking into the mirror, which originally when this mirror showed up, he saw his parents, and, him and Dumbledore have an encounter later in the book where, Harry sees his parents, and he's like, well, what does the mirror show me, because I thought it showed me, like, you know, your family or people who you've lost, but, and Dumbledore's like, no, it shows you your greatest desires, mm-hmm. and he asks, one of the cute lines is he asks Dumbledore what he sees, and Dumbledore says he sees a nice pair of woolen socks, because you can never have too many pairs of good socks, and I was like, I love that.
Also, I call baloney,
but that's funny. Yeah, but I love that response. Yes. So then when Harry looks in the mirror this time, he sees where the Sorcerer's Stone is, and Quirrell cannot find it, and that's what Voldemort means. And so, anyways, then Quirrell goes into this, I think it was Quirrell, Voldemort, someone goes into this long diatribe about, like, you know, pretty much giving all kinds of exposition. And it's just this big portion of that, of, like, that page talking about, this is your parents, and this is what happened that night, and this is...
The trope of why the villain did the thing
also,
they did.
Yeah, and then also, it wasn't Snape that was, you know, cursing your broom, it was me, and then yeah. Hermione set me on fire, and then it wasn't this, it was me, and I let the troll in, and I was like... It was a trope, but at the same time, I was like, wow, as much as I love this book and I could still reread it as an adult, what a YA thing to do is, like, give this person... And then also, it's clearly stated, like, says, like, that this is just a character trait. He's just so caught up in, like, everything he likes to do, and he's so self-centered that he likes to, like, talk about this stuff. But, like, given the specific character trait for the main purpose of just giving all this exposition, and I was like, That's fun. That's a little, like, YA trick mm-hmm. to be like, okay, now young kids can understand everything that's happening. And as kids, we were probably like, oh my god, like, Snape wasn't the bad mm-hmm. guy. But I loved listening to that, and I was just thinking, oh man, if this was, like, if Harry Potter was written as more of an adult novel, not that it would be, but, like...
The motives would be less clear?
No, I not necessarily less clear. It's just, it would not, I don't think... All of that would have been done in dialogue. It would have been done either through action or, like, third-person omniscient mm-hmm. or, like, something. But, like, it was just clearly stated in dialogue. So that way, like, kids knew this is what's happening. I liked that.
Yeah, that's true. That's very, very true. I liked everything leading up to it because it seemed like maybe they weren't getting a lot out of their actual Hogwarts education. But at least these three kids... between Harry, Hermione, and Ron, were really problem-solving. They had to get through everything. So they're like, ooh, we're just so curious. Because mm-hmm. mostly because, like, we're busybodies. Like, it really didn't have anything to do with, like, we're so tough, we're gonna save the day. Like, that came later. Harry definitely got, like, a nice little, like, savior complex at a certain time throughout the novels where it was just kind of like, well, I guess I just have to do this because this is just what I do. It's part of my character arc now. And then the first one, they were just really, really curious. I think they just wanted to know. So they saw Fluffy for the first time when? Because now I'm not... They saw it before because they asked Hagrid about it.
They were in the invisibility cloak. They were scared that the cat,
Mrs. Norris.
Norris would... and then also Finn... What's his name? The janitor.
Nope, that's not right at all. What is his name? Filch.
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 I was like, Finch? Filch? Okay. Filch. Filch was, like, heard them, mm-hmm. and I think kind of suspected they were an invisible, or, like, somehow, like, casting an invisibility spell, and so they just found a door to duck into, and, and it was the locked corridor, and Hermione's the one who got them in, like, with the unlock.
Alohomora.
Yeah.
Such a smart aleck. Saves their butt a lot of times, but such a smart aleck. So they got really, really curious. They're like, there's a three-headed damn dog in this room. Like, what are we going to do with that? So they ask Hagrid about it, because, you know, what other oafy adult are they going to ask? And they start kind of, like, piecing this little thing together, and they're like, all right, well, Snape's trying to get the Sorcerer's Stone. That's what's happening. And they finally come to it. And they're like, well, what do they say? Like, we need to get it first? Like, do we need to keep Snape from getting it?
That was the thing, is, like, you know, okay, sure, maybe, because I think even, no, I think it was Hagrid. Hagrid's the one who's like, you really think that, like, you can get past all of these charms, mm-hmm. or whoever's trying to, like, steal from them can get past all of these charms, that each teacher, like, set up each corridor and whatever, and it's true, it's like, what do these three kids, who do they think they are?
Who do you think you are? You're 11!
Yeah, you're 11-year-old kids. You think, first of all, no one is worried about the stone being taken by anyone. And sure, maybe that's, like, not, like, accurate. They should be a little worried.
Yeah.
But then three kids think, like, oh, we better steal it before this robber who clearly stole, like, was gonna try and steal from Gringotts. Like, who do you think you are?
Also, 11-year-olds are not sneaky. Like, I have students who think that you don't notice when they're, like, playing games on their computers. Like, you have a distinct... No. No. You have a different look on your face when you are doing your job and when you are playing Snake on your computer. I'm sorry. So 11-year-olds are not sneaky. Don't care if you're a wizard 11-year-old or not. Especially these very obvious kids who are making no secret of asking around the school. All right? They even go up to McGonagall and they're like, Snape's gonna steal it. Snape's gonna steal it. And she's like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, no, he isn't. Like, that's not something that you really have no idea. So when it came down to it, and they're like, well, we found out that, you know, Fluffy is guarding a trap door. Like, we're gonna go there. And this is even after, like, Hagrid is dumb and, like, gets dragon, and they've got the reason Harry saved the day is because Hagrid was dumb, but I bet a lot of the only reason that Quirrell and Voldemort knew was because Hagrid was dumb. So, mm-hmm. like,
so maybe Hagrid's the problem, and I hate to say it, because love you, but maybe if Hagrid wasn't around, all of this would have been taken care of a lot faster. Like, they're, you know.
Dumbledore would have been able to figure out that Quirrell had a weird parasitical relationship with Voldemort on his head, and, like,
They would have never figured out that Fluffy falls asleep to music.
Yeah, because that's why Hagrid got the dragon, right?
Yeah, he got drunk. And...
got drunk. Too much fire whiskey, man.
Yeah.
It's never a good idea. Never, never a good idea.
Yeah.
But I would say the one cool thing is that we do get one of our climax in this book, and it seems in most Harry Potter books. The climax kind of works in a true literary fashion, where I'd want to say it is the last, like, 30 pages of the book. Because sometimes you'll get a book and there'll be, like, several, like, little mini climaxes. But mm-hmm. in Harry Potter books, you get your climax and then you get a 3-page wrap-up. Mm-hmm. It seems like almost every time. And that's not necessarily a criticism. Like, that's just, it seems like a thing for YA and kids' books. You get the wrap-up, you get the payoff really fast. But having to go through all of the challenges was interesting to watch the kids do that. Mm-hmm. So, we fell. We're in Devil's Snare. Like, what do we do now?
Yeah.
We can't Google it. How do we fix it?
Yeah. Also, the fact that, the fact that three 11-year-olds could figure out how to get through all those chambers makes me think that maybe the teacher should have made them a little harder to get through.
Yeah.
You know, like... Like, I get the whole point, it's like, oh, you know, the herbology person did, like, this part of it, and then, like, someone else used logic, and then someone else did the Quidditch thing with mm-hmm. the keys, but I'm just like, three 11-year-olds got through, like, mm-hmm. you're just banking on the robber not being good at chess or something, like...
Well, here's the deal, they were counting on it being one person with one set of abilities, like, Instead, you had three children who all had different abilities. Like, yeah. Maybe they weren't expecting a team of robbers.
Well, they should. They're wizards. What?
Yeah, no, it really shouldn't have been that easy.
Also, fun little side story. I liked the, centaurs? Is that right? In the forest?
Mm-hmm. Fire ends?
Yeah, I like how at one point, he's trying to save Harry, and so he's like, hop on my back, and then there's this, like, little side story where it's like, how demeaning you let someone ride on your back. Yeah. He's like, I'm trying to save him, and it's like this whole, I'm like, I want to know more about that and their culture.
He was almost, like, completely ostracized by the other centaurs, wasn't he? Like, how could you do this?
Because it's, like, so beneath them to act like a horse, because they are men as well. They're centaurs.
He becomes a professor at some point. In 5 or 6? Okay. I don't remember which one. But he ends up, he becomes the divination professor after Trelawney kind of loses it, who is not a character in this book. No. That would have been a good Halloween costume.
That would be a fun one, yeah. There's a lot of good Halloween costumes.
Harry Potter's kind of, like, chalked in cool costumes. Yeah, and that's where we find out about the unicorn blood. Yeah. So, Harry gets in trouble. Harry Draco. We haven't talked about Draco enough. He's not a very big character in this. No. He's kind of a little shit. Yeah, but he's not a big character.
You meet him, kind of, like, he's just talking down about, like, muggles, and, you know, he doesn't know who Harry is when he first meets him at the cloak shop where they're, like, trying on cloaks and whatever, and he's like, I'm Draco Malfoy, and, you know, that kind of pompous attitude. But throughout the book, the most you know about him is just that he is Crabbe and Goyle.
He's rich.
He's rich. He's in Slytherin, and, like, he has one altercation with Harry and Neville, like, which leads to Harry becoming the best, like, seeker on the Quidditch team.
Yeah.
But beyond that, he's not the most prominent character in this first book. He definitely comes out later. So.
He's also, you can tell that he's got a certain amount of confidence because Slytherin tends to be top dog. We find out, I think at the end of the book, that Slytherin has won the House Cup. Mm-hmm. 7 years in a row. And they are due to win this year again. And if it wasn't for Harry and Hermione and Ron going through and doing this, and Neville trying to stand up to them and tell them not to go.
Yeah. Good job, Griffin, Neville.
Good job. Dude, these books should have been about Neville. Like, Neville's way better than Harry.
Neville Longbottom and the...
My favorite were... And standing up to my friends. My favorite were, let's see, Hermione. Let me try and look it up.
Neville Longbottom and the time I won Gryffindor.
Somebody wrote, let me see if I can find it somewhere. Somebody wrote a list of how Hermione is the actual, like, winner of all of these stories and how all of the books should be about her. Let's see, Harry Potter...
Yeah, you know, to be honest, there's a lot of, not, like, characters other than Harry Potter who are, like, really badass. Like, you know, they do really cool things, and I wouldn't say are, underutilized, because I feel like J.K. Rowling does a good job of, like, using characters where they're supposed to be used, but... Harry Potter does always come out as, like, he's, like, the magic boy who, like...
The boy who lived.
Yeah.
So the first one was... And this is a Bustle article, so that's how you know it's probably great. But the first one says, Hermione Granger and that time I used the power of research and deductive reasoning to make sure Harry didn't die. Number two is, Hermione Granger and that time I figured shit out and literally ended up petrified for the cause and it took my friends weeks to figure out that I had the research on me. In her hand. Number three is, Hermione Granger, that time I was the Time Lord. Number four, Hermione Granger, and that time I realized I was hot and smart and saved Harry's ass with research. Again. Uh-huh. All the time. Really. He would have died without me. Number five, Hermione Granger, and that time Harry was too emo to actually do shit, so I did shit in his name because I'm the power behind the throne, clearly. Also, P.S. fought evil Death Eaters and won. 6, Hermione Granger, in that time I told Harry about the dangers of copying off of someone else's work that wasn't mine. And oh, look, I was right. And Hermione Granger, in that time I let Harry decide where to go and what to do, and we ended up wandering the forests of Dean for like 5 months before saving his ass at Hogwarts.
Those are good.
I'm gonna take a screenshot of that.
That's a good one.
There we go. I'll post that up on Instagram. Do you think, okay, so let's go, not, Bechdel, because this book would not pass it, so we can't say that, because I don't think the two women had a conversation
not about at Harry any Potter. Time. Yeah, wait.
Because Harry's in every single scene, right?
They can be in a scene, it's just two women,
Had a dialogue,
not talking about... I mean,
maybe McGonagall and Hermione?
Yeah, that's about it, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm suspect that it didn't pass. But as far as strong female characters go, I think that Jo, because again, we're always on first name basis with our authors. Mm-hmm. I think that Jo did a great job of giving us strong female characters that didn't feel the need to compromise anything. Like, yes, I read one of the bustle titles where it's like, oh, Hermione found out that she was hot at some point in time. But the women in these stories could still be really strong and didn't have to be crones. Mm-hmm. And they could be smart and the same thing. Like,
yeah.
McGonagall is an old woman, sure. But there are plenty of, like...
in the movie, McGonagall is a badass.
Dame Maggie Smith.
She's the best. Oh my gosh.
So I think that she did do that. But she didn't push the status quo so much to make her main character a girl. Mm-hmm. Do you think that Harry Potter would still have the same popularity and notoriety if our protagonist were not a male?
I don't think it would change anything about the story. And mm-hmm. if we're talking just purely, like, if you were to make Harry Potter and... any female, Hermione Potter, for instance, the storyline would not change. In terms of popularity, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't...
Because we had Bella. Bella was very popular, but, like, I felt like Bella was more... Is pitied the wrong word? Like, not even that, but, like...
You're talking Twilight?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of other series with... female leads.
Yeah, but she also wasn't, like, the mystical one, you know? Like, she had two strapping men, like, that were, like, the magic people. And then, you know, the spinoff, like, what's the other movies that came out about, Fantastical Beasts
and Where to Find Them?
Yeah, like, again.
Still, male protagonists. Yeah. Like, there are supporting female characters.
That's where I'm, like,
strong supporting female characters in those stories, but yeah, still...
I think in the time frame when Harry Potter came out, if it was a female lead, it may not have gained as much popularity, honestly, because, like, I was even thinking, like, superheroes and stuff mm-hmm. like that. There's vastly more male than female that have made the popularity, and right now we are in a time where we are wanting to see more and more female leads, but then I think it was a different time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just personally what I think.
And even going, like, I'm thinking more, like, let me see, same time period. I want to say the first Game of Thrones book was written about the same time as Harry Potter, maybe even a little bit earlier. I could totally be murky on my dates, but
yeah.
I believe, like, mid-90s for both of those. And we did have strong female characters, but I don't think that any of them started strong. In Game of Thrones. Have you read any of those or seen the show or any of it? Okay. Because eventually, most of the lead women find their voice and they find mm-hmm. their place and are imposing characters. But they didn't really start that way. So I'm interested in suggestions from you, dear audience, mm-hmm. for... and maybe it's just that I need to read, like, Ursula Le Guin or a female-written... book at some point in time. I want to know some sci-fi or fantasy or some kind of world building that revolves around like a a strong female character.
Like, you know, you have even if Percy Jacksons.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm really trying to go through like the.
I've read Percy Jacksons.
But it's just interesting because even I wonder if it's more of, because even the reasoning behind her being J.K. Rowling was not because she didn't want to necessarily be known as a female. Was that something to do with it?
I would imagine so. I feel like any time that people do that, even, I mean, especially if we're going back, you know, a couple centuries, women definitely did that.
Yeah.
So George Eliot was a woman, you know, lots and lots of English women didn't use non-diploms.
So that's where I think maybe, maybe going back to when Harry Potter first came out, if it had been a female lead, it wouldn't have been taken as, seriously. Like, maybe it would have thought that, it would have been too much of, like, a frou-frou type of novel. You know what I mean? Like, not that it would be, but I think that was kind of the mindset. And all of the kind of young adult sci-fi that at least I've heard of, read, or has been made into movies has definitely been, maybe except for,
Golden Compass has a female lead.
Golden Compass, and then there was the, A Wrinkle in Time.
But that's teams. It's like, it's mainly, mainly Meg.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But she's, like, closely flanked by her little brother and her cute neighbor and...
And it's about her finding her dad. So, I don't know. Shout out to the audience. Yeah. Like, give us any suggestions of any cool world-building sci-fi female lead.
I'm not dissatisfied with the fact that Harry is a male. Like,
not at all.
I don't think that I would have identified with it anymore as a kid. Maybe I would have if it had been a girl. I don't know. I'm just curious about those kinds of choices. Like, if that, because she's a woman who has daughters. So, was it, like, a commercial, was it a creative choice? Was it a commercial choice? Was it, like, was that the only person that she could possibly think of was, like, this generic Harry Potter kid that sounds like every other kid that you've ever heard of, and he just happened to be special? Like, is that the point? That he is generic and special? I don't know. I'm probably going too deep, but...
Yeah, but interesting. Yeah. Interesting thought. If you could bring a pet to school and your choices were cat, owl, rat, or toad, which one would you bring?
Are they gonna follow directions and listen? Because I feel like a cat would be the most comforting. Like, they could sit on your lap and just chill with you while you do your work, as long as they listen to you and do what they're supposed to do. Definitely not the rat or the toad, because I feel like they'd be less predictable.
Yeah.
But an owl has a job and, like, does stuff for you.
And sometimes can be cute and, like, give them little pats and stuff.
It's true, but Hedwig kind of nipped at him a bunch. A lovable nip. Like, no, thank God.
But they do have an important job of, like...
They do.
Yeah.
I'd say an owl, probably, because mailing notes would be cool.
Yeah. I was between an owl and a cat for the same reasons. Cat, you can cuddle with as long as they're cool cats.
Yeah.
But owls, it's like, I don't currently have an owl. I kind of want a magic owl that can do my mail for me.
That, like, understands English and, like, listens to
like,
you and
go.
Stuff.
Yeah, go! Do this!
Go take this to whoever. Thanks. Yeah. Goodbye.
That'd be cool. I think I'd go owl.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool. Because it'd be easy to get... It's easy to get a cat.
And you're a Ravenclaw.
Yeah, I'm a Ravenclaw.
I'm Hufflepuff.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Do you know what your Patronus is?
I did do the Pottermore thing and I found out my Patronus... It's for a Ravenclaw. It's a very odd Patronus. It is an adder.
Oh, wow.
So my Patronus is a snake.
Wow.
Fun fact: I do have a classroom pet, and he is crimson and gold, and I named him Godric after Godric Gryffindor. So
we have a Harry Potter fan.
Yeah. No. So he's there all the time. Godric. He's actually at my house right now. But yeah. What's your Patronus?
It was a bird, and I don't remember what type. It's been a minute since I've checked on it, but it was a not an eagle, but a big bird. Kind of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Because it was like when you're answering the questions, one of them was like, freedom or safety? And I think anyone who answered freedom probably got some
bird.
Form of a bird.
She's a bird.
Got it.
I did kind of like, though, that it seemed like when we were young, and I'm talking... Maybe not MySpace days, but not beyond that. There were a lot of, like, dumb little online quizzes. And we're talking, like, before BuzzFeed, before any of that. And you could tell, based on what answers you were choosing, what house you were going to get. Like, mm-hmm. ooh, would you, it's kind of like a Disneyland where you're doing like that, which character are you? Would you rather stay in and read a book or go out and have a party? And it's like, you know that one of those is Cinderella and the other one is Belle. Like, come on.
Like, so try and mask it a little bit.
but I didn't feel like Pottermore was like that. Pottermore was definitely just like, let's basically formulate your personality down into four different quadrants.
Yeah, that one was good, but no, it's true. There was so many of those quizzes where it was like the characters, and you're clearly choosing like one or the other.
Are you a good guy or a bad guy? Like, ooh, well, I want to be a Slytherin, so I'm like, bad guy. Yeah. But all of that's fun, and I think my students are, they're still reading this. They're still watching it. I had a kid I saw at school the other day who had on high top Gryffindor Vans.
Cool.
And I was like, all right, okay, this is still a thing that kids are into. Thing. Yeah. So.
I think, yeah, I've not been to Harry Potter World. I'd like to go. I would like to buy a $200 wand that you could do magic in
the
streets.
Are they that much money?
Or something like that, yeah. But, like, it does magic.
Yes, it does magic, Taylor. I've been to the one here, but I haven't been in Florida. I've been to the one in LA, which is small, but fun.
I'd like to go.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts on the book?
It made me want to read more. I wish I wasn't so busy.
Yeah.
Maybe, it definitely made me want to read
more.
We'll
do another Harry Potter book in the new year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a good one to continue on, because I haven't, it's fun rereading them. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, and it was nice too, because I know you and I are both, we work and we have school, and there's lots of reading and studying, and it was kind of a nice diversion to, like, just have this, like, beautiful, magical world. It reminded me of a time when, like, all of the books that I read were just, like, for fun like this.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember being young? Not to say that, I don't know if I took AR tests, but, like, we took comprehension tests on books all the time, and, like, mm-hmm. you'd read whatever book you wanted, and you just needed to, like, get a certain number of points, and, oh, man, that was the best.
Can we do that again in college?
Yeah, let's do that. Just take, like, a modern, no, but if we took a modern lit class, you just have to write a bunch of papers.
Yeah.
No thanks.
And then, well, it's, like, as long as you, like, say something original, they really don't care. Or if you just say, yeah. What was that? It was a joke in a TV show where it's like, no, I'm gonna mention it. Never mind.
As far as like paper writing?
Yeah, it was just like, as long as you're like, I think she's gay, and it's like, 10 points. Like, it was
something
like a joke.
Original.
Yeah, something like that. If you just make like an outlandish comment, you just get like points in college or something.
Oh, man. Anyway. I don't know if that's wrong. That's probably right. Well, let's think about
rating. Do you want to do book or drink?
I'll do the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do the drink.
Let's think. You know, we do this every single time, and I almost never think about them in advance. Like, I really
It always comes as a shock to me.
Yeah. I'm gonna read the book. Oh, do you want to do the drink first or the book first?
We can do the drink first.
Okay.
I was trying to count how many balls in Quidditch. There's a snitch, and then the bludgers? Or are those the people?
Two? No, I think those are the things.
Okay, there's two of those crazy ones.
Quaffle.
And a quaffle. One quaffle, two bludgers, and the snitch? Is that it?
I think so. So we're doing it out of four?
Yeah, we'll rate it out of four.
Okay.
But, okay, here's the catch. So we're rating it, there's four balls. The three of them are going to be the same point value, but the snitch is worth four. So it's actually going to be out of eight.
So, two bludgers, one quaffle, one golden snitch.
Okay. So the snitch
confirmed.
The snitch is worth... for
150 points.
But I'm making the snitch worth. We're gonna do it out of an even 10, I decided.
Okay,
So like the snitch, what is that? 7, 8, 9. So the snitch is worth 7 points, and then the three other balls are worth 3 points.
Okay, cool. What do you think?
Okay, I'm glad we shared it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually didn't hate the taste. I thought it was, like a nice milkshake. Would not have another one right now for sure.
We didn't even finish, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna rate it. I'm gonna rate it just the snitch. But it's kind of like when Harry caught the snitch in his mouth and everyone's like, does it count? And they're like, yeah, it counts. So it's like, seven.
Okay.
Like, all that's right. How, but like, yeah, in that voice.
I open at the close. I agree, mostly because I want to give it more than three.
Yeah.
But I don't want to give it more than seven. So there's that. I liked the texture, like the between the bubbles of the cream soda, which we didn't use a ton of, and the ice cream. I'm a root beer float kind of girl. It's like the only time that I ever have soda is if I see an A&W somewhere, like I'm gonna get a root beer float.
Yeah.
And only at a A&W drive through, which is very weird, but whatever. So I like that kind of frothy, like ice cream meets soda texture. But yeah, way too sweet to have a ton of it. Maybe if I was eating a meal, that would be different, but I also don't want a milkshake while I'm eating a meal because they're kind of like a meal. Anyway, yeah. So if you like root beer floats and rum, then make this drink. It's great. Enjoy butterbeer. I don't really know what the butterbeer is like at, Harry Potter World because I got a, I think it was an amber rye that they had that was, like, just... They had three different Harry Potter beers that were, like, Harry Potter-specific ones. So I was like, that's like more that, my speed. Yeah. And it was had some, like, dragon name. So I was like, yeah, okay, I'm there. Thank you. I don't need the butterbeer. As far as the book is concerned, I want to rate the book out of, like, 20,000 galleons. Because I'm pretty sure it's about that much money that Harry has in the bank from his parents. Galleons. He is a wealthy, wealthy, wealthy kid. He's got a lot of money. And this is the first book in a series, generally first book in a series. I feel like I always like it less than all of the others. Cause my favorites are 3 and 7 personally. Cause I really like the Marauder's Map stuff and in Prisoner of Azkaban, but I'm going to give it, I said 20,000.
Yes.
Yes. I'm going to give it 15,000. Okay. So still quite a bit, pretty high. Very engaging, awesome world building.
Yeah.
I think every kid who enjoys this genre should read this book, especially before they see the movies. Like, the movies are pretty true to the story, but you can't rely on movies to paint the whole picture for you. So yeah, 15,000. And I think as they go on, that number would probably get higher and higher. Yeah.
I'm gonna go 18,000. I think it was really strong. I really enjoyed it. I still have fun reading it. It was, and, like, honestly, the only reason why I wouldn't give it a perfect score is just because at times it is clearly, for kids. But that being said, like, as an adult, I still love Harry Potter. It was a great read. And, yeah, I agree with you. I would definitely recommend to anyone who's interested in this genre, any age, to be honest. If you haven't read the book, I'd say just try
it.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah. That being said, next book that we're doing together is not in the same vein at all.
No.
Would you like to introduce our next book? But
the next book we're doing is a little darker than Harry Potter. Just a teensy bit. It's Sharp Objects by Gillian Flynn?
I don't know if it's Gillian or Jillian.
I'll look it up. I'll listen to it before our next episode. Mm-hmm. But yes, Sharp Objects was recently made into a television series.
HBO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have not seen it, but have read the book, so we will be talking about that next time. Anything else that we need to cover?
Looking for some December suggestions, I think. I don't think we put out a book list for December yet.
Oh, yeah.
We chatted about a few different ideas, but as always, we would love your suggestions for cocktails, for books, and you can find us on Twitter and on Instagram at DPS_podcast.
You can always email us as well if you prefer. It's drunkpoetsocietypodcast@gmail.com. And also on our Instagram or at anchor.fm/drunkpoetsociety, you can leave us voice messages, which we don't have any for this week, sadly. But you can talk about the book. You can ask us questions. You can just say hi. But yeah, leave us a voice message.
We take corrections also.
Oh, yeah. And please, if we ever like say something, just that's not accurate, let us know, because and let us know if you think Harry Potter would have done as well if it was a female driven series.
I'm very interested to see what people think of that.
Yeah. Other than that, we hope you guys stay safe and warm. And remember that it is not drinking alone.
If you have a book.
Bye.
Bye.